Before we go on with the episode, I'd like to just take a moment to wish everyone a really quick a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, all that good stuff, whatever you practice. I hope it's a good one. I hope all your family's doing well, and I hope everyone's being safe during this pandemic. With that being said, season's greetings and on with the episode.
I know y'all remember that metalcore band I Wrestled a Bear once that was active from like 2007 to 2016. But what if I told you that it was about Teddy Roosevelt? That's not actually true, but it got your attention, didn't it? Keep listening to find out. Howdy, how's it going? I'm Eric Stewart, and you're listening to Landfill, a podcast where I spend some time info dumping about things that I find interesting enough to a point where I feel like I just have to talk about it. Thank you so much for giving me a listen. It really means a lot to me. I really hope you enjoy listening to me talk about information that's mostly interesting. It's mainly useless, but interesting no less. I think so, at least. I hope you do too. Of course you do. You're listening to this. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoy.
So Teddy Roosevelt, I'm convinced without having any way of corroborating this, that Teddy Roosevelt was straight up hung like a horse. Like, I mean, whenever I first learned about him, I think the first time that I actually like got an in-depth like lesson about him was like when I was in college and I had to take an American history class or something like that. It was like an American history that was mainly about the Reconstruction era, like after the Civil War. And Teddy Roosevelt was someone who came up, of course. That's why I'm talking about this. But Teddy Roosevelt was someone who came up. And the way that my teacher talked about him, she made him sound like if he were to run for president today, he most likely would have gotten elected. Because this was also around the time, remember, that Donald Trump was running for president. I think it was like just before he got elected, actually. Now that I remember. I don't remember the exact details. But that's about when I first like got an in-depth lesson about him. And I did my own research, and what I've come to the conclusion of is, did he have big energy? That energy, I'm not going to say it out loud, but did he actually have big that energy, or was he really just kind of a FUD? Stick around and you'll find out more. So, Theodore Roosevelt Jr. Yes, Jr., there was a senior. Theodore Roosevelt was born to Theodore Roosevelt Sr. and Martha Roosevelt in New York City on October 27th, 1858. Senior was also a leading member of Citizen, having been a member of the glassplate importing business, Roosevelt and Son, and he helped found the New York City's Children and Society, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the American Museum of Natural History, and the New York Children's Orthopedic Hospital. Teddy, for the rest of the podcast until it's relevant, I'm just going to call Teddy Roosevelt Jr. I'm just going to call him Jr. and then his dad will just be Senior. But Senior did all this. He was Senior was a leading citizen of New York City. Junior also had an older sister, Anna, a younger brother, Elliot, and a younger sister, Corrine. I think that's how it's pronounced. I don't remember. But during his early life, he suffered from asthma from about 3 years old, and it was so bad to a point that he often had to spend his earliest years in bed and relied on tutors to teach him from home because he couldn't really leave because, you know, the asthma. But he was still very enthusiastic about learning. So, you know, the tutors helped him a lot. And then, you know, after he learned how to read, he was absolutely enthralled by books. This kid would straight up just read stories about the old Viking Eric the Red and even like newspaper stories that he found. This eventually led to him becoming curious about the natural world, and there was even a time where when he went to a market, he found a dead seal at a butcher's stall. And he was captivated by this, so much so that he studied it, measured it, and eventually came to possess its skeleton, which he took home, and it became the prize exhibit of what he called the Roosevelt Museum of Natural History, which he had set up in his bedroom. Man, I know probably at his age, I wasn't setting up natural history museums in my bedroom with a dead seal skeleton. Oh man, that's so wild. I can't really fault him for it though, truth be told. His mom would often take him out to the woods to try to alleviate his asthma, which Teddy, of course, being as enthusiastic about nature as he was, he used this opportunity to take notes on all of the trees, the bugs, birds, and pretty much all the other nature things that he saw in his notebooks. Remember, he was an environmentalist, so he was absolutely entranced by any chance he got to get out into nature and do his thing. Most people already know about the story of how, you know, the teddy bear came to be, for example. You know, that little bear that you give to children and everything. Most people already know, well, not a lot of people will know, but the official story goes that Teddy Roosevelt was on a hunting trip looking for a bear, but he couldn't really find one. So one of his buddies tied a bear cub to a tree, but Teddy straight up refused to shoot it because of how cute and cuddly it was. And then it was released unharmed, and then the teddy bear was created to celebrate the president's act of mercy. What most people don't know, however, is that there's a few details of that story that I just told you that aren't exactly true. First off, the bear wasn't a cub. The bear was an adult. Second off, in order to even be able to tie this bear to a tree, they had to wound it, like, horribly to begin with, and then they tied it to the tree. Third off, he didn't actually refuse to shoot it for, like, morality reasons. He wasn't all like, oh, this bear is too cute and cuddly, I don't want to shoot it, animal rights, all that shit. No, he didn't really care. He just kind of looked at it, and he was just like, you know what, this bear is already harmed, and this bear is already captive. So it really wouldn't count if I just, you know, shot a bear that someone else found and caught and hurt and tied up. So I'm not shooting this. Oh, and also the bear was not released unharmed. His companions killed it. Yeah, I really hate to kill that perception, but you know. That's how the teddy bear came about, is when Teddy Roosevelt refused to shoot an unarmed bear. So, fun fact. He was still raised, of course, under the norms of Victorian society, having been born in 1858, of course. He was raised under the norms of Victorian society, which included, as members of the upper class, they did not mix well with less wealthy individuals, strict decency rules were enforced, manners and politeness were of utmost importance, and, of course, Sunday was the day for religious observance, and they often would just kind of just sit and, you know, contemplate. Teddy, of course, on Sundays was not allowed to do any of his nature shit on Sundays, which, as you would expect, he wasn't vibing with. He straight up hated it. In 1869, Teddy's family and him went on a tour for a year. I should probably clarify, I know I said earlier that I was going to call Teddy Jr., but I'm just going to call him Teddy because I don't really care to. But anyway, in 1869, Teddy's family went on a tour in Europe for a year. And Teddy actually wasn't liking this either. So he didn't like Sundays, and he didn't like his tour to Europe. And he even later wrote about it, "I cordially hated it, as did my younger brother and sister. Practically all the enjoyment we had was in exploring any ruins or mountains when we got away from our elders and in playing in our different hotels." And then when Teddy was 13, his dad gave him his first shotgun. It wasn't really a good shot though, and he kind of got picked on by the other kids for it. But he later found out that the reason he wasn't a very good shot was because he was very nearsighted, because what he realized is when his friends challenged him to shoot at a billboard off in the distance, he wrote, "Not only was I unable to read the sign, but I could not even see the letters." He told his dad about this, and his dad got him some glasses, and then ever since then, he was just entranced by the world that much further. He pretty much said, "Man, the world's a lot prettier than I thought it was." Because remember, he couldn't really see that well, because he could only like see like a few like inches in front of him, I think. I don't know if that's actually true, but again, he was very nearsighted to a point where he obviously needed glasses. He eventually learned taxidermy, and he soon started stuffing the birds he shot, and he put them up in his natural history museum. So now that he can actually shoot the damn things, now he can actually stuff the things and put them in his little bedroom museum. Good for Teddy. I'm proud of you, bud. He even used his taxidermy skills on a trip that he took with his family to the Mediterranean in, I think it was the winter of 1870 to 1871. I'm pretty sure it was in the winter. But anyway, his family and him took a trip to the Mediterranean. They visited places like Egypt, the Holy Land, Syria, Greece, and Turkey. And, of course, Teddy was very much more into this than he was in the first trip. If you remember, his family went on a trip to Europe in 1869, and he wasn't cool with all this. But this newer trip, he was definitely a lot more into. He was very excited about this trip. And he even took up the opportunities to shoot the exotic birds and add them to his museum. At some point when he was 13, though, probably around the same time that he got his shotgun, I don't know for sure, but I know when he was 13, he was sent to Maine by himself in an effort to try to improve his health. I guess there was a doctor there that they were going to send him to, but they sent him there to improve his health. And on the train right there, there was a group of boys that pointed him out because, you know, he was kind of frail and sickly because, you know, he had the asthma and shit like that. But this group of boys pointed him out, and they just beat the absolute shit out of him. And his dad found out about it, and Dad Senior basically told Teddy, he said to him, "Get swole, bruh." That's an actual quote. You can quote me on that. Research it. He told Teddy to get swole, and so they hired someone to teach him how to box. Soon he became obsessed with bodybuilding, admired strong people and people who displayed manly virility, and he wanted to live what he called the strenuous life. Again, remember, he never actually went to school because, you know, the asthma, so he depended on the tutors, but the Roosevelts had set a goal for Teddy to gain entry into Harvard. Having never gone to an actual public school, they were like, you know what, this kid needs to go to Harvard, because we want him to go to Harvard. Which, I mean, I guess that's fair, but, you know, the kid's got asthma, dude. He's never went to an actual public school. Harvard? Anyway, they wanted him to go to Harvard, even though he wasn't actually that good with math. But, nevertheless, after their trip to the Mediterranean, they hired a tutor to help him with his math skills, and he busted his ass to try to get himself up there. So he got this tutor, he worked his ass off, got really good at math, not really good, but good enough to pass at Harvard. And then finally in 1875, he had passed the entrance exam for Harvard. When he got to Harvard, he immediately took up boxing, politics, and even a rowing competition. And he had also become really good at debating people during this time as well, taking on fellow students as well as his professors. I imagine Teddy was one of those people who would, I'm probably going to cuss a lot in these podcasts, I apologize about that, but I imagine Teddy was one of those people who, like, would go to, like, lectures and shit, and then he'd be like, "Oh, I'm Teddy Roosevelt, I know things," and shit like that. He probably wasn't like that because he wasn't that relevant at the time. But he'd still be all like, "I can debate me one-on-one in the ring, teacher, dude." And then he would, you know, debate the teachers and shit because, you know, he's Teddy Roosevelt in Harvard. Anyways, I'm getting off track. During Teddy's sophomore year in Harvard, when he went to visit home, he discovered that his father was severely sick. And whenever Teddy got back home, his condition seemed to get better, but then soon after he went back to Harvard for the new year, his health took a nosedive, and Senior died just a couple months later at the age of 46. And it was found out later. I don't know if it was found out later, but he kept this really well hidden from Teddy, but he died from a gastrointestinal tumor that caused him great pain for months and prevented him from eating. Like you said, he kept the extent of his illness from his son, who was always away at Harvard. But in the end, he was informed immediately, and he took a train to Cambridge, where he missed his father's death by like a few hours. So, big sad. Teddy Roosevelt Sr. died. Big sad. It sounds like I'm joking about it, but it's kind of sad, actually. Teddy was understandably depressed because, you know, of course you are, because, you know, your dad died. But he didn't like to let it show, though. He refused to let it show, and he insisted on soldiering on, even though his depression was still pretty fairly evident. This is one of those details, what I'm about to tell you. This is one of those details that is kind of fucked that he did it, and it kind of made me think about, is he actually the BDE kind of dude that I thought he was? But during one summer vacation, he had rode his horse to exhaustion, and when a dog insisted on chasing, he just turned around and shot it. He was pretty much just like, I'm sad and depressed, I'm gonna ride my horse to exhaustion. And this dog was like, oh, I'm gonna follow you. And Teddy was like, nah, you're not following shit. So yeah, do with that information as you will. He did also begin hiking, though, with a man he called Bill Sewell. I think that's how it's pronounced, his name. He also began hiking, though, with Bill Sewall as a means to find some solace from his depression. And Sewall even later wrote about Teddy during these hikes. He wrote about him. He was fair-minded, Theodore was, and then he took the pains to learn everything. There was nothing beneath his notice. I liked him right off. I liked him clear, though. There wasn't a quality in him I didn't like. He wasn't headlong or aggressive, except when necessary. As far as I could see, he wasn't a bit cocky, though other folk thought so. He did eventually grow up to be, you know, a real dude bro as a teen. He was very opinionated and charismatic, and a couple of his outbursts of approval, you know, bully and delighted, became trademark responses for him. So he's pretty much just chill as fuck as like a teen. He's like one of those like jack kids who would like, so like, I don't think he's actually like a bully. I think he was just like, you know, got along really well with like the jock kids who were just kind of just cool as hell with everyone else, who would just be like walking by and just high-fiving people who you think are just probably just anyone. I don't know that for sure, of course, but I would like to think that he's like that. He graduated from Harvard in June of 1880, 21st in his class of 160 other students. What percentage is that? Let me calculate that really quick. He was 21st in a class of 160. Oh man, he was in the top like 13%. There you go, Teddy. That's how you do it. Top 13%. After a short honeymoon with a woman he had met and married from Harvard in 1880, he enrolled in a law degree at Columbia University. During what little free time he had, he decided he wanted to learn about the War of 1812. And this is the part where you learn that he's kind of a nerd. And when he couldn't find a good book on it, the dude straight up decided to write one about it. So he pretty much just went like, I want to learn about the War of 1812. What's this? I can't find no good books about this. Fuck this. I'm gonna write my own book, because I'm Theodore Roosevelt. He probably didn't like actually go around saying that he was Teddy Roosevelt. That's just my perception of what. I don't need to explain it. You all right now. After a trip to Europe in 1881, Teddy decided that he wanted to be a politician. And ironically at the time, because remember at the same time, Teddy was still part of the upper class. So ironically at the time that he decided to be a politician, politics was seen as lesser than the upper class. And his friends tried to convince him not to get into politics. But we all know how that went for them at this point. After returning to New York, he joined the Republican Party. At this point, he started dealing with a whole different class of men that he hadn't previously dealt with before, which is the rough guys who were skilled at taking pot shots and using the dirty tricks of state politics. But he quickly integrated, and he won the nomination for the New York State Assembly. He was a firm believer that each man was in control of his own destiny, as a Republican does. But not without recognizing that the system was grossly unfair, with the people who already had all the money having almost all the opportunities at the same time. So he was pretty progressive for his time, actually. At least as far as it seems. And he made it a goal to make the system fairer and in such a way that allowed everyone to succeed. When he wasn't involved in politics, he was doing the same, you know, nature boy shit, going out, writing shit about bugs and everything, taking pains to learn pretty much everything. In September of 1883, he set out for the Dakota Badlands for the sole reason of getting a buffalo head as a trophy, which he did succeed at, and he did eventually put that in his, you know, natural history museum. Because, of course you do. In 1884, though, he got a telegram that his very pregnant wife, Alice, which was the woman that he met at Harvard, if you remember earlier, the woman that he met and married at Harvard, he got a telegram that Alice had just given birth to a girl, but also that not only Alice, but also his mother was extremely ill. So he received a telegram that not only his wife, but also his mother were extremely ill. He returned home to find his mother, Mitty, had succumbed to typhoid fever. And on the same day, his wife of 4 years, Alice, died of Bright's disease, a severe kidney ailment. They both, tragically, died Valentine's Day. They died on February 14th, 1884. And he later wrote in his, he wrote in his diary that night, the light has gone from my life. And man, I can honestly relate to his pain there, because this is kind of a private detail, but, I lost my mother when I was 13. I don't think he was quite this, I wasn't quite that young whenever my mom died. Actually, I wasn't as old as my mom was when, God damn it, how do I say it? I wasn't as old as Teddy was at this point when my mom died. I was 13 when my mom died. I probably said that already. And, I didn't really, you know, like Teddy. I didn't really, like, let it show, but it kind of fucked with me a little bit, because it was like, man, there's this person that's been in my life for, man, pretty much a whole life, and now they're just kind of gone, and there's really not much you can do about it. That kind of fucks with you. I'm okay for now. I'm okay now, but, you know, that's still one of those things that I think about a lot, is my mother passing. And I usually, you know, wonder, would she be proud of me if she saw where I was today? You know, that kind of thing. Anyway, I'm getting personal. Let me get back to this podcast. Actually, let me take a break really quick. I'm going to take a break right here with, you know, his mom and his wife passing, and then I'll come back and I'll record more. So I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. I'm gonna do horrendous things if you go somewhere. I probably won't. I'll probably just cry. But yeah, just hang on for a second. I'll be right back. When we left off, Teddy Roosevelt's mom and wife had passed away on Valentine's Day in 1884, and he wrote his diary that the light is gone from his life. He tried to push on with politics, but even though his fellow Republicans looked to him as a future leader of the party, he did understandably feel very hollow inside. So he decided he needed a break, so he temporarily retired and he moved to one of his ranches in North Dakota. And the locals kind of gave him shit because he had kind of a dude look when he lived there. Well, when he moved there, rather, I should say. He showed up in Medora, North Dakota, wearing buckskins, carrying a brand new Winchester rifle, and a hunting knife he bought from Tiffany's Jewelers. He didn't really care about what they were saying, though, because, you know, he was vibing. He was getting away from it all. He was just getting away to the ranch. He's just a dude just going away to the ranch just to clear his mind. You know what I mean? People do that still, right? I hope. He hired his previous hiking guide, Bill Sewell, to manage his ranch, but Roosevelt didn't just, like, sit on his ass all day being, like, you know, the boss kind of guy. Because, of course he didn't. He's Teddy Roosevelt. He was actually out on the ranch with his workers, chasing spooked cows and even, like, standing guard during, like, even the long, cold nights. Yeah, he was like an actual. He probably would have been very well loved in this day and age. Because in this day and age, people really appreciate like people who are, you know what I mean, who don't just like sit in their ass and bark out commands, and be like, "Hey, you got to do this thing." I probably don't have to convince you of that. You probably know already, but I'm just saying. I know I would have appreciated him. After the winter of 1886. Through 1887, which killed about half of his cattle, he returned eastward back home to New York, and he came back home a chunky boy. He had gained 30 pounds since he had left for the Dakotas, as well as his time there seeming to have hardened him and restored his confidence. So it all works out. After returning home, he met up with and fell in love with a childhood friend, Edith Caro, and even got married on December the 2nd, 1886, as well as having 5 children together. Not too long later, he decided to run for mayor of New York, despite having absolutely little chance of winning, but he actually did come in third place with 27% of the vote, of the popular vote, I should say. After this quote-unquote defeat, he soon decided to write a book called The Winning of the West, and he also gave some speeches for Benjamin Harrison. After Harrison was elected to the United States, he would later appoint Roosevelt to the Civil Service Commission. And later in 1894, he was appointed president of the board of the New York City Police Commissioners. Here was when he decided to improve the structure of the police force, imposing more stringent standards for recruitment and wedging out corruption. Then, in 1897, he was again appointed by the President William McKinley as the Assistant Secretary of the Navy. Which, by the way, I had no idea that was even a thing until doing further research into this on Roosevelt. But, you know, that makes sense. It sounds like a Roosevelt kind of thing. He then advocated for building the Navy strength, writing at one point during his tenure, "I should welcome almost any war, for I think this country needs one." After the Maine exploded in Havana Harbor on February 15th, 1898, Roosevelt ordered several ships to prepare for war, which then led to the Spanish-American War of 1898. After the Maine, he retired as SecNav and formed the 1st U.S. Volunteer Cavalry Regiment, who the press dubbed the Rough Riders. I should probably clarify before I go further. SecNav is, you know, short for Secretary of the Navy. Just in case that was confusing for you. Then when they deployed to Cuba, they were just absolutely wrecking shit up for them and gaining the U.S. many victories in the war. When he returned home, he ran for governor and won by just 1% of the popular vote. And of course, he was a passionate advocate for the rights of the underprivileged. He was against large corporations and monopolies and championed the preservation of natural resources. Then in 1900, he ran for vice president and won alongside President McKinley. After President McKinley was shot and killed, Roosevelt succeeded him and became the 26th president of the United States, having been the youngest man to hold that position at age 42, followed closely by John F. Kennedy. I believe he was 43. I'm probably wrong on that, but anyways, he's elected president. A large part of his domestic policies were focused on breaking up monopolies, which included instigating 44 antitrust suits, forcing the breaking up of the Northern Securities Company, and putting regulatory controls on Standard Oil. But the thing was, he was kind of sort of playing pretend on the being a trust buster thing. He was actually kind of pretty cash money with them in private. Like, he would hash out, like, terms that would seem appealing to the public, but he would keep the super rich rich and would actually break up monopolies as little as he could. He was apparently able to get away with as much shit as he was able to get away with by attacking the press, attacking anything negative that the press did, and tried to smear them as a whole so he could protect himself from criticism, popularizing the terms muckraking and yellow journalism. I wonder what that tactic reminds me of. It's a mystery. He established the United States Forest Service, created 5 national parks, and put 230 million acres of land under public protection. All 3 of these he had done through executive action. But remember, Roosevelt wasn't actually much of an environmentalist. He was like a naturalist, I think that's what it's called. The point is, he mainly really did it just so he could hunt without, like, worrying about, you know, shit going, like, extinct because people are just hunting on unregulated grounds. So it's really just so he could hunt without worrying about everything going dead, if that makes sense. He signed the Meat Inspection Act and the Pure Food and Drug Act, which eventually led to the creation of the FDA. In terms of foreign policy, however, he was an ardent imperialist. A few examples included, he mediated the Treaty of Portsmouth, which brought an end to the Russo-Japanese War, and he won a Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts. He made a deal with Panama to construct a canal in the middle of it, which then led to the separation of Panama from Colombia. He also pushed for the 8-hour workday, even though this was defeated in the House. After his second term ended as president, he went on an African safari on behalf of the Smithsonian Institute. Roosevelt, as well as other prominent scientists and hunters, returned with over 11,000 specimens to be included in the Smithsonian Natural History Museum. Then William Taft came along, and he didn't approve of Taft very well at all. He believed that Taft had made the Republicans too conservative, and he then began advocating for new nationalism, which was basically labor over capital. Kind of sounds like some commie shit. After losing the 1912 presidential election, Roosevelt quit the Republicans and formed his own political party, the Progressive Bull Moose Party, running again as an independent. And now here comes my favorite bit about Roosevelt right here. On October the 14th, 1912, Roosevelt was shot right in the chest by an assassin, and it probably would have killed him had it not been for his thick glasses cases that he had right there where the bullet went, as well as the 89-minute-long speech that he intended to give that day. 89-minute... This dude, he folded up a speech like... It's probably like... I don't know how thick it actually was. It's probably like... maybe like an inch thick if you stacked it up together. But then he like folded that on top of itself and he put it in his breast pocket, and that's what saved him. Fucking awesome. He then taunted the would-be killer, saying that he would be arrested, and then he just gave the speech anyway. When he first showed up to give the speech, the first words that he gave out was, "Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know whether you fully understand that I have just been shot, but it takes more than that to kill a bull moose." After he gave the speech, he finally went to a doctor to, you know, take care of, you know, the bullet in his chest, as you normally would. But the doctors couldn't really get it out. But the bullet wasn't in a place that would be life-threatening to him, so they just kind of left it there. And it just kind of stayed there for the rest of his life. But in the end, after all of this, the election was won by Woodrow Wilson with 42% of the popular vote. Even though Roosevelt did beat the incumbent president with 27% compared to the 23% for Taft. During an expedition in South America, he contracted tropical fever after receiving a leg wound and ended up coming back home 50 pounds lighter and concerningly pale. This kind of marks the beginning of the end for him. His last few years were very painful, with malaria and complications from the infection on his wound, on his leg. And then on January 6th, 1919, after he complained the night before about not being able to breathe, he died in his sleep at 60 years old from a blood clot in his lungs. His oldest son, Archibald, telegraphed his siblings upon Teddy's death, "The old lion is dead." And that's the story of Teddy Roosevelt. It's been several years since I actually learned anything in depth about Teddy Roosevelt, so this is interesting for me. I think the podcast is over. That was Teddy Roosevelt.
What your
Thank
country
you for
can do for you.
Sydney.
But what you that was, can do for
that's
your country.
The wrong president.
What are you doing here? Are you recording a
Sydney,
podcast?
That's, okay, you need to
can
get
I
out.
Be in it?
Okay,
I'm
thanks for
Kennedy.
Listening. Subscribe to the podcast. Thank you. Bye-bye.